This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me in the studio is the show's producer, Carrie Jr. II.
Good morning. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Carrie. So I've been spending the summer with my 81-year-old mother.
Yes.
She is living with me this summer because my sister and her family, who she normally lives near in Missouri, they're out of the country. So she's here in Detroit with me. And it reminds me every day of the things that we need to think about when our parents or other loved ones get older, and the things that they are going to need that so many of us don't anticipate. And I feel like not a lot of us are preparing for it.
What did you believe this would be like when you would have to take care of your mother for this period of time? Well, first, how long is she going to be with you for? 8 or 9 weeks?
She's been here the whole summer. I think it was 11 weeks
11
total. Is okay. The plan. You know, I to be honest, I didn't know. You know, I mean, I see my mom frequently when I visit Missouri or she comes to Detroit. But, you know, I don't spend day after day after day around her.
And caring for her.
And trying to make sure that, right, that she has the things that she needs and she's doing the things that she needs to do. So, you know, I was kind of, you know, I was a little mystified at what it would be like. And seeing it up close, there are a number of things that I've noticed or learned that I'm like, oh, we need to think more about this, or we need to plan more around this than it seems like we have been prepared to do.
Yeah, I have not had that experience personally.
It's coming.
Right. No, that's what I think about. Well, I did have my grandmother. She used to live with her son. And I know that there's always like there's an added you have to consideration of how you navigate your home, when you can be away, when you can. I know we've had to adjust our production schedule to make sure that you can accommodate your mother being in her home too. So I'm always thinking about like when the right time is for me to start thinking about what that situation might look like. Maybe my mom won't live with me. Maybe she'll want to stay somewhere else. And a lot of folks I know have to think about what they're going to do for their families, but also the family members themselves who are getting to that age where they have to think about like, how am I going to continue to live at a reduced capacity of what I used to be for most of my life.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what we're talking about on today's show with Amanda Leggett, mm-hmm. who is an aging expert at Wayne State University. We're going to talk about all these choices and all of these questions that need answering as the people around us, our loved ones, get older and require care. You know, can we keep them in their homes and allow them to live out the sort of back end of their lives in the same place that they've always been? Or do they need to go to supportive care facilities? All those kinds of questions are confronting, you know, people in my age bracket quite a bit in my generation. And it's only going to grow bigger because people are living a lot longer. The things that we have to plan for are just multiplying, it feels like, every year. Amanda Leggett, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I think this is a really critical time to be having this conversation because I kind of feel like if you are of a certain age right now, you're dealing with someone who is aging. I kind of feel like I'm in that window all of a sudden. And everywhere I go, everyone I talk to, is confronting the same things, usually about our parents at this point. And because our parents, I'm a Gen Xer, my parents are boomers, because that's such a large generation, it feels almost omnipresent.
Yes.
That we're all kind of thinking about these questions about how to manage that for our parents all the time. So I'm really glad that you're here. So I want to start, though, with talking about some of the signs that we should start considering long-term care and living options for older people. What are the things that tell us, hey, it's time to move mom or dad out of the family home and maybe into a place where there is more supportive care available?
Definitely. So I think a big thing you want to be looking for is something that we call kind of activities of daily living or instrumental activities of daily living. These are things that most of us don't think twice about that are part of our daily life, whether it be, you know, managing our finances, the ability to do our own laundry, to cook meals for ourselves. But then when we get into more foundational things like the ability to bathe oneself or just mobility in terms of getting across a room, for example, by yourself, or to be able to toilet independently, for example. These are these kind of basic activities of daily living that we need to manage to live independently. And sometimes with chronic medical conditions, but also sometimes just with aging, we start to see decline in some of these areas. And when individuals start to need more assistance in managing these activities, that's kind of when we might start to think about, is this something that the family can help with, or an in-home care aide might be able to help with? Or do we want to start thinking about that transition to a long-term care facility? And I think a big piece of this also really just boils down to safety. Yeah. We want to make sure that if someone is independent in their home, that they're safe, right? They're not forgetting and leaving the stove burner on, for example, mm-hmm. or, not at risk for falling in a shower or a bathtub. So some of these concerns can really come up for families where that question can start to be, you know, are they okay at home? Do we need to bring in extra supports, or do we want to start thinking maybe about a transition to a long-term care facility?
Yeah. And how do you make that decision in sort of grand terms between, okay, my mom or my dad needs to go to a facility where there are, you know, people who can help throughout the day, or we can manage this at home. We can make some changes. We can maybe add some support at home that don't exist now, and let this parent or this person, whoever who's close to us, you know, enjoy this part of their lives in the most familiar environment.
Right. These are incredibly difficult decisions, and I think they can really vary from family to family and kind of the context and the dynamics of this individual and this decision. So, I mean, of course, you want to prioritize as much as you can kind of the choices of that individual. Do they want to stay in the home? Are they open to, you know, long-term care? Kind of what are their values and preferences? But then you also have to face the reality of, you know, the life situation of the family members. Where do they live? Are they nearby where they can, you know, jump in and help readily? Are, you know, adult children or other family members living farther away? If they're working full time and raising their own children, you know, do you have the capacity to really provide the level of care that's needed? There's really so many variables here to consider, and it can vary from family to family. I often think it really helps to bring in kind of a neutral party to this conversation. So bringing the family together for kind of a family meeting, but having like maybe a neutral moderator that can be there to help guide this conversation, whether it's a primary care doctor that can provide the context on, you know, really how is the individual managing independently, whether it's a social worker, for example, but someone who can kind of help to facilitate these conversations with families to think about what are their resources, what is their availability, what's the context of the individual's care needs and their home, right? Can their home be modified, right? Can we make modifications in the home to enable you know, a safer place to be independently? Are there friends or family members that are able to come in and support this process? Or is the situation where really, you know, a move to a long-term care facility is going to be best for the well-being of all parties? So it's really an individual decision, and it can be really, really challenging. Oftentimes in my work, we see family members that really disagree on these topics, right? Yeah. We might have one adult child who really wants their parent to stay in the home and another who really feels a long-term care move is the right choice. And so that's why I say kind of having that neutral party to kind of come in and help guide these conversations can sometimes be really helpful.
And how available are those neutral parties, those third parties? I mean, it seems like I'm not sure a lot of people even know where you would start looking for someone like that.
Right. It's a great question. I mean, I think I would start maybe with a primary care provider to see if there is a social worker or someone in their care practice that might be able to fill such a role, or an area agency on aging. They can often help point to community area resources around this type of decision making.
So I want to talk about the benefits and kind of shortcomings of living independently. And, you know, I'm asking these questions as the host of this show and as the interviewer here, but I'm also asking these questions as somebody who is literally in the middle of, trying to sort this out for my mom, who's 81 and lives independently, and manages most of, you know, her life on her own and is in pretty good shape, for her age and some of the things she's had to deal with. But, you know, each day, I think, presents a different kind of picture than the last day.
Sure.
Each year, of course, presents a really different picture than the last year. And this comes up over and over again when we're talking about it. How much longer can she live independently? If she is not going to live independently, what's the alternative? What do we do? What can we afford? What would she be okay with? And when do we make that decision? But I want to talk about what aging in place looks like when it's done well, when we're getting it right and we can keep our parents or a loved one or someone we're caring for in the home that they're most comfortable with. What are the things that work about that?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think one thing that comes immediately to mind is having a crisis plan in place. You know, what are you going to do when something goes wrong? I think that this is often kind of a linchpin that leads to decision making about a move or a transition, often for families. And it's a really great start to, before we get to that point, right? Before the crisis happens, how can we as a family kind of navigate that? Again, these are great conversations to be having with primary care providers and others who are part of a care team of an individual. So how can we as a family navigate that? But if we, you know, take the crisis out of the picture, some of the things I might think about are, who's on my team? So in my research, I study kind of what we call caregiving networks. So who are all the family members and friends who are available to assist if needed, or are actively assisting kind of with care? And do you have that supportive team? Are there people nearby or even at a distance who can step in and help in different ways if needed? And if you have that strong team kind of around you built to help someone live independently, it can often work really well. Sometimes, you know, home modifications need to be made, whether it's shower bars or, you know, things that can help to turn stoves off if they're left on for too long, a variety of these kind of technological equipments that can be installed in homes can help manage independent living. But I think about, you know, is someone able to, again, kind of engage in these activities of daily living, or do they have the team around them that can can help support in, you know, providing some meals or helping with managing finances or, you know, driving someone to necessary medical appointments. Is that team there and not kind of overburdened and overwhelmed, able to help someone really navigate this? It can often go really well for people. Again, though, it's often when a crisis occurs, that's really the linchpin to make decisions around other types of care that may be necessary. So as much as possible, we want to get ahead of that curve or get ahead of that crisis and really figure out a system that works for individual families to support people to be able to live independently.
And it, you know, I feel like in some ways all of this turns on really narrow decisions and narrow margins, right? Mm-hmm. The decision to say, okay, we're going to keep this person in their home because the benefits of that, I think, emotionally and mentally are unquestioned, right? Mm-hmm. It's better for people to stay where they're most comfortable. And so you make that decision out of that emotional impetus, right? That's what's driving it. But at the same time, you're taking a chance in some ways.
Right.
I mean, as you point out, you have to have this kind of contingency plan in case something happens. You're really rolling the dice. And I think that's what the difficulty often is being comfortable with the idea that, that you're making a decision that, that could have this terrible downside. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think there's a lot of, anxiety and guilt that attend that kind of decision making.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think not universally, but the large majority of people would prefer to age in place and would prefer, mm-hmm. for example, to pass at home. But, you know, another global concern and that has really come to notice more in the United States in recent years is also kind of an epidemic of loneliness and isolation. And this is another major concern of older adults that we often don't consider when we think about aging in place, that it can be very isolating, especially if someone is not as mobile and able to get out and enjoy their normal social activities that they might have done previously. And this is one of the benefits, really, that long-term care facilities can provide is being surrounded by peers, having activity directors, having meals where you're eating with other people, right? So I think it's easy to look at that transition as a negative one, but really there can be many benefits to an individual making a transition to a long-term care. Again, it comes down to families and weighing these pros and cons and what's going to be best for each individual.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation with Amanda Leggett of Wayne State University about aging and aging in place. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. We are back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined. We're talking with Amanda Leggett. She is an assistant professor at the Institute of Gerontology and Department of Psychology right here at Wayne State University. Amanda, let's talk about this from the senior side, the people that we are often in the position of caring for. What do they say about this time in their lives, and what do you hear from them about, you know, what's important about these choices, going to a supportive care environment or staying at home?
Right. I think one of the things I hear a lot is, I, you know, look forward to my retirement to travel or to spend time with grandchildren or to XYZ, right? But something can often come up in that process of aging. We know, you know, chronic medical conditions, the rates of these start to increase with aging. A variety of complications can come up. So we kind of look towards our retirement with all of these goals of things we'd like to do and enjoy in these years. And then sometimes things can get in the way of that. And so I think it's so important from a perspective of an older adult is how to still find that enjoyment, how to still engage with life, be active, you know, still meet some of these goals that you want to enjoy in the second half of your life. But sometimes we have to kind of adjust and compensate and do this in a way that may be different from how we've planned. But I believe there's still ways that we can work with older adults as they're aging or as they're facing, you know, different functional or cognitive medical complications to still help them find the joy and still be active, engaged citizens.
So part of the question here is also how involved seniors in our lives can be in making these decisions, right? Because as they get older, they're sometimes less able to take in all the information and and process it in the right ways and make the right kind of decision from a security or a safety standpoint. And of course, this is inherently emotional, all of these questions, right?
Yes.
Where am I going to age? What is my life going to look like? That balance between wanting to respect the things that older people want or think they should be able to do and what's realistic, I think is another really confounding dynamic in this whole question about aging in place.
You're exactly right. And I think probably the emotional aspect of that is probably preventing a lot of people from having those conversations, right? Mm. It's a hard thing to talk about and to discuss, and we don't always like to get into the what ifs and, you know, what will I do? But truly, the sooner we can start to have these conversations as families, the better, because then our values and our preferences around care decisions, if we're able to clearly express these or make, you know, plans and share these with our family members and friends, then it really helps to take some of the burden then off of adult children, for example, or a spouse or other family member when it comes time for some of this decision making, knowing that you've already had these conversations, listened to kind of these values and preferences, and understand, you know, where that individual is coming from, what they're hoping for. The sooner we can have these conversations, the better chance we have to then really try and make a plan to respect those wishes and desires. Of course, it's not always possible. And, you know, I think oftentimes, again, when I'm working with family caregivers, I have to help them, you know, step away from some guilt that they may be feeling around this decision making of, you know, mom wanted this or dad wanted this, and I'm at this place. And that can happen, and it's okay. And in those moments, you know, we have to make the best decisions for the family. But as quickly as we can start these conversations, I really think it's best to help family members know what the older adult is really desiring in their later years and help make a plan to try and make that possible for as long as can be.
Yeah. And we haven't even really talked about the financial
the
context here. I mean, the high cost really of aging,
yes,
in whatever context you try to do it, requires more planning than certainly most people have endeavored at this point. You know, I think maybe in the future, because people are living longer and we're starting to talk about what happens when we age, we might be better prepared. But right now, it seems like there's this added tension around the idea of not just making a decision, but then being able to afford that decision as well.
Right. Yes. Care surrounding aging is hugely expensive. And these are really, really challenging things for individuals trying to figure out, you know, what can a family afford? What, you know, is covered by insurance, is not covered by insurance, you know, Medicare, Medicaid. These are really challenging things. And in-home care, out-of-home long-term care, all incredibly expensive. And so kind of trying to balance when it's necessary, what is affordable, huge, huge conversations for families to think about.
And the planning there,
planning.
You know, it's almost like you see this happening to your parents now with whatever planning they put into place. And you start to think, boy, I've got to get started, you know, even if I'm in my forties, I really have to start thinking about what's gonna happen in my 70s, what's gonna happen in my 80s.
Right, exactly. It's never too early to start thinking about this with a financial planner, and as a family, right, making sure we think about that, because exactly as you say, we're living longer, and it's kind of unknown. We don't have a magic ball that's going to tell us, you know, what crises we might face in our future, how long we're going to live. We need to plan for kind of all possibilities, and financially, that can be quite difficult.
I also want to talk about the role of the caregiver and the way in which that evolves, which, you know, also is about planning in some regard, but it's also just about, you know, circumstances, things that happen. And I know so many people who have, of course, found themselves in the role of caregiver of a parent or some other relative, just because that there isn't another alternative. And that's not what anybody planned for. And so there's almost the position of being forced. And I don't mean that in a negative context. I just mean you just don't have a choice. That is playing out for the younger kind of generation, the caregiving generation, in a way that also, you know, merits some thought and discussion about, well, you know, not just is this fair, but even if it isn't, what do you do about it?
Right. Exactly. Yes, we tend to see caregiving falling to people who are in closest proximity, right? Or closeness in terms of relationships. So oftentimes this is going to be a spouse or an adult child, and it's likely to be an adult daughter in many instances, although sons very much take active roles in care. And a lot of it has to do with who's living in closest proximity to that individual. So it tends to fall to these individuals first. But again, we increasingly see kind of family teams that are assisting in different ways. And these dynamics get worked out within families of kind of who's doing what and supporting in what way. I mean, there's even ways that family members who don't live geographically close can still contribute, whether it be, you know, helping to send, you know, supplies that someone might need or coming to visit for a period of time and giving that primary caregiver a break, some respite. So there's a variety of ways that all sorts of family members can be engaged. But you're exactly right. It does tend to kind of start with whoever that closest relationship is and who is going to be in closest proximity is kind of the natural person to step into that role. And it is often maybe unplanned, but it is kind of a responsibility that often people feel they are the one to need to take on. And then oftentimes are scrambling to figure out what this looks like. How do I navigate this with the other responsibilities I have in my life, whether it be work or raising your own children or whatever that may be?
Yeah. I mean, the effects of that on the caregiver are you know, in my experience and talking with folks who are going through it, I mean, it's hard to even put into words what the effect is of the change in people's lives sometimes that comes about, because all of a sudden you are a caregiver, and even if it's not full time, that alters just you know, everything about how you plan, how you think, what you do with your day, and of course the how you manage the emotional strain of that responsibility.
Definitely. I mean, we see a lot of stress in family caregivers. We see relative to same age peers who are not family caregivers, we see higher rates of things like depression and anxiety. So this has been long established in the field of research around family caregiving, that stress and strain can be quite high in these groups. On the flip side, though, I do always like to acknowledge that many individuals really thrive in this role. It gives them, you know, new meaning to their day, and they find that they maybe had caregiving skills they never even knew were there. So there's many ways that individuals can kind of grow and experience positive aspects of care, whether it's knowing that their relative is well cared for because they're able to give back in that way, or kind of growing in kind of leadership and care coordination skills that they might not have otherwise developed. So I think it's always important to kind of balance the positive and the negative, but you're exactly right. The strains and stresses of this role can be quite high for many people.
Yeah. I have been caring for my mom this summer in a way. I mean, she's been living with me because my sister and her family, normally my mom lives near them in another state. They were out of the country for the summer. So my mom came to Detroit and has been staying with me. And you're absolutely right about that, that sort of duality of, of the circumstance, that there is responsibility and there's, you know, tension around that. And there's an emotional and mental toll that it all takes. But then there's this incredible satisfaction that you get from just the smallest things. Mm-hmm. I've been getting up many mornings, before I come to the studio and just making breakfast for my mom, even though many mornings she's not even up by the time I leave, but making breakfast and leaving it for her, and telling her it's there when I walk out the door, there's this sense of accomplishment that's associated with it, but also this sense of again caring, not just caregiving, but caring for this close person, this close relative of yours, that it's hard to ignore that.
Definitely. I mean, what a gift. Just the making of that breakfast is to your mother, right? And it can be a joy to be able to give in that way. Often when, you know, we've received that care from family members ourselves for such a long time, it can be a joy to give back.
Yeah. I want to talk about what happens when children can't be caregivers or can't afford effective home retrofitting for aging in place, and people are left with few choices. Of course, nursing homes are full of people who don't really have a lot of other choices. What other options, I guess, are there?
Yeah, another option that comes to mind would be a program like PACE. And PACE is a program for older adults who would meet kind of state level criteria for nursing level care, but are living independently in the home. And so this is a program that provides kind of a multidisciplinary care team. Oftentimes it will provide transportation to a PACE center, for example, where you could receive therapy, medical care, social activities, meals, for example. And I would say many individuals that are on PACE are having both Medicare and Medicaid, which helps to support a program like that. And so there are options in addition to nursing level care for individuals who meet that same criteria, but that are home-based and trying to enable individuals to live independently.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Amanda Leggett of Wayne State University's Institute of Gerontology in the Department of Psychology. Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We're talking with Amanda Leggett. She's an assistant professor at the Institute of Gerontology and Department of Psychology here at Wayne State University. Amanda, I want to talk about the idea of multi-generational housing. You know, there are lots of communities in our country where that kind of multi-generational living is a little more common than in other places. But I feel like in this country in general, it's just not how we do things anymore. And that is a change. You know, my mom grew up in a household that for a long time had her grandmother as part of it. But I can't think of anyone else in our family now who's doing that. Is that something we should be, I guess, encouraging somehow or making easier? Some days I think it, you know, as much as it would require real adjustments to have your parents living with you, in some ways that seems like it would be easier. Am I right about that?
Definitely. And I agree with you. I think it kind of went away for a while, but I'm increasingly seeing families again living in this way. And I think there's a lot of beauty there, right? Mm. And maybe children, grandchildren, getting to spend that quality time with a grandparent and help as part of the care process potentially. And also just the intergenerational joy of spending that quality time together. And grandparents, for example, being able to assist some with children, for example, in the home. And I'm seeing this increasingly in families that I work with. And so I do think it's a great option for certain families who are able to make this work, you know, logistically in the home. And it may take some modifications in how the home is arranged or set up. And it may take some thinking about, you know, the value and the challenges and the benefits of that for individual families. But I do think that there's a place for this and that this is a really nice setup for many families to be able to have that quality time together and to really intergenerationally be involved in care in both directions.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I mean, that's a really different structure for a household.
It is.
Physically, mm-hmm. financially, emotionally. How do you sort of, I guess, prepare for that? And how do you manage those stresses once you do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be so challenging. I mean, I think in terms of preparing, is this a family member that is already maybe nearby that you're already engaging in, you know, bringing them over to the house more often, getting them kind of engaged in the daily life already in ways can kind of help to start to transition that process. So it seems a more regular part of that daily living. And for children as well, for example, you know, maybe talking with an area agency on aging around ways that you might modify a bathroom or a room to be more conducive for an older relative, like in terms of structural changes in the home. I think these are some things that I might consider. Of course, this isn't always possible. Sometimes, you know, you might move a family member from out of state to come in and be part of the household. And that is going to be a huge transition. And I think it's just, you know, preparing yourself mentally for this transition as much as you can, you know, thinking about some of that planning. But I think the reality is it just will be. It'll be a big change, and giving yourself grace as things come up as you make this transition, right? Just understanding that it's not all going to be perfect immediately and you're going to have to work through challenges. But we, you know, as humans are adaptable, and I, you know, I believe that families can make it happen if they desire to do so.
Yeah. And it seems to me that one of the other pieces that's important is to not, I guess, not necessarily believe that if you're in a multi-generational home environment, that you don't also need some support.
Right.
That somehow that cures all of the mm-hmm. the needs that somebody has. I mean, I think you know, adding on and bringing people in to help with some things, of course, you know, can be expensive, but it also helps ease the not just the transition, but the, I guess, the ongoing tensions of that kind of household.
Definitely. I mean, something that we say commonly in the caregiving field is you can't pour from an empty cup, right? So if you don't have anything in your cup, how are you going to help, you know, in providing care for others? And so, again, that's where I say kind of think about who's on your team, who is in the family, who's a neighbor, who's a friend that you can call on when things get challenging that might be able to help you. You know, sometimes getting your lawn mowed or bringing a meal or coming over and sitting with your relative so you're able to go out and run errands or do whatever you need to do. So who's on that team that you can kind of help rely on when things are challenging? That can be a really great thing to think about, and not be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help. We all need it. And there are many, many supports out there for caregivers, whether it's support groups where caregivers can go and meet with other individuals who are in similar life circumstances and really brainstorm together and troubleshoot together and think through these challenging scenarios. And I find that can be really helpful for caregivers just to know they're not alone. Other people are experiencing these things too. Yeah. And just having that support network to bounce ideas off of. There are, you know, many counseling opportunities that can be specific to helping individuals working through caregiving challenges that they may be having or mental health challenges that kind of as a result of this life circumstance. And then there's programs like respite care or adult daycare, it's sometimes called, where individuals can go to such a program and have meals and activities and engagement and just give caregivers kind of a break when they may need it or if they're traveling, things like this. So there's a variety of tools out there that can kind of help depending on what the needs are that individuals may have.
Yeah, yeah. I do want to talk a little more about mental health and the role it plays on both ends of this, right? Both the people who are being cared for and the people providing care. In most aspects of our society, I feel like we don't spend nearly enough time thinking about mental health or trying to make room for it. It seems that this is an area where we can't afford not to do it.
Right. 100%. Yeah, I mean, I am in the psychology department, right? I'm a huge advocate of mental health. And I do think caregivers can get so caught up in the day-to-day and the minutiae and all of the activities and everything that's going on and lose the time needed to focus on self-care and, you know, seeking assistance for their own mental health, which is so, so important. You know, if there's anything that we can take maybe positively out of the COVID-19 pandemic is now how accessible these resources are in virtual ways. So it can be really difficult maybe for a caregiver who's navigating care to leave an individual at home by themselves or just to find the time in the day to get out and maybe see someone in terms of mental health. And now we have such great access and availability to these resources virtually. I think it's a really wonderful thing. Even these support groups, like I was mentioning, many of them are now available through Zoom. And so I think it's really important to, you know, have some awareness if you are starting to struggle, if you see that these caregiving responsibilities are impacting your mental health, it's so important to do something about it. And you are the most important. Your mental health helps you to be able to provide that care and to support yourself and your family. Yeah. And so seeking help when needed, absolutely critical.
I also want to talk about the policy context here and the things that we're doing that either make this easier for families or make it harder. I mean, healthcare, of course, is one of the things that policy-wise has an effect on this. But there are a lot of other things, I think, as well that could ease the transitions that we're talking about and give people more options, I guess, about what to do and to feel better about those choices. I wonder if you can talk about from your perspective what some of those policy issues are.
Definitely. I mean, I think different states, their policies vary in terms of some of these services and programs, how much is supported for individuals like adult day, respite care, these sorts of programs. Certain states provide more funding for and others provide less. And so I think policy can have a huge impact in the types of supports that states offer for older adults, for family caregivers in terms of respite and things like this. This is a huge area that comes to mind. Another would be, you know, maybe policies around work and employment. So this is a huge part of most adults' days is going to work. And, you know, family leave policy, we often think about this, for example, with pregnancy for new parents having a child, but it's maybe an afterthought when we think about families providing care for an older adult and having some of that support for taking time off when needed if there's a medical emergency, or just greater understanding from employers of, you know, sometimes an individual may need to run home to leave work to take care of something urgent. So having some policy support in terms of some of these, you know, employment, paid leave opportunities would be another thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. When we get to this kind of point where we're making these decisions, you know, again, it's stressful and it can produce a lot of anxiety. If you had just a few tips for people about just things to keep in mind to not lose it while you're having to do what for many of us is, you know, one of the most difficult sets of decisions that we'll make. What would those tips look like?
Yeah, definitely. I think a tip would be, you know, reach out to your area agency on aging. They have a wealth of resources around what's accessible and available in your particular area, and can kind of help guide you based on what your particular needs are, what's available in your community to meet that. I would say talk with your healthcare providers or the healthcare providers of the individual that you're helping to assist in terms of care around what they think those needs may be, how they expect those needs might evolve, and how you can prepare and plan for some of those changes that can come with different conditions or just with the aging process. Again, like I have been saying, you know, kind of figure out who's on your team, who can you rely on when things get hard, right? Who's going to be able to support you or that individual in certain ways, and just don't be afraid to ask for help. So these are some of the things that I would think about. And then I always say, give yourself grace. These decisions are so challenging for everyone, and each individual's circumstance and their family is going to be different.
It's all different.
It's all different. And so you can't compare yourself to someone else. It's not always helpful to do that. And you have to think about, you know, how you best promote health and mental health and well-being for the individual you're aiming to assist with care, but also yourself, right? And so have grace, and you are making decisions that are the best for you and your family, but there are people that can support you in your network, healthcare providers, social workers, area agencies on aging. You know, I do a lot of work with dementia, family care. That's my main area. Mm-hmm. There's the Alzheimer's Association, other groups that provide a lot of resources in each state and can kind of help you pinpoint what you have accessible to figure out a plan that's going to work for you and your family.
Yeah. Okay. Amanda Leggett, it's really wonderful to have you here for this conversation. Thank you for joining us on Created Equal.
It was a pleasure. I so greatly appreciate you highlighting this important issue.
Yeah.
Okay, Stephen. So is there anything specifically you think that you'll take away from this conversation that might help you while you're still caring for your mother now?
I think it's, giving ourselves a little grace, a little slack. I think there's so much pressure that people in these situations put on themselves to be perfect and to make all the right decisions all the time and to make them, you know, quickly. I think that's probably insane. And Amanda Leggett was really insistent that we should be more patient with the process and more patient with ourselves.
That is exactly the point I was actually going to highlight. So that's fantastic. No, well, there was two. There was that one. So I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking the same thing. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be the perfect caregiver. Yeah. The other point is inspired by the conversation itself. And that is that it seems pretty important to develop a healthy relationship with your parents to the extent that you can communicate and they can communicate with you their needs and their mm-hmm. wants at this particular mm-hmm. time so that they are comfortable. It could define whether a change like this, a major life change for them and for the caregiver, is perceived ultimately as a more stressful time or a time that brings you together.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, it's a time where you're making tough decisions, but where you're also able to enjoy both, you know, the person that you're caring for and that person is able to enjoy it. And that's a hard balance to strike, but I thought she did a good job of telling us how we might get there. That's it for Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.